Hello and welcome back finally to the Nothing to Boo With You podcast with me, your host, Clodagh. Guys, I'd say you're wondering, was this ever going to happen? Because I have been threatening it for a long time. But look, I always believe timing is everything. Everything happens for a reason. And I just was not ready to share the Nothing to Boo With You journey yet. And earlier this year I was dealing with a few little bits myself, transitioning in, I suppose, my things in my personal life, things with my work life, and getting to know me and really getting to know Chloe before she turns 40, which by the way is in a couple of weeks, and I'm actually excited about it. I feel that coming into my 40s I feel more comfortable than I've ever felt in my own skin. I certainly feel the most authentic I've ever been, and I feel very unapologetic in the way I carry myself and the things I say, way more now than I ever did. And I'll tell you, there's something very fucking powerful in that. So when I wanted to release the second season of Nothing to Boo With You, there was a couple of things I wanted from it. Number one, I wanted there to be audio and visual this time because I wanted to share my guests with you, not only so you could hear them, but also so you could see them, see how we interact, because these people are giving up their time to talk with me, share their life stories. And in fairness, it's quite a vulnerable thing to do, and I appreciate that so much. And that is why I wanted it to be visual this time, so it will be available on more platforms. You know, it'll be available on social media, on YouTube, on Spotify, and on various other platforms too. Also, I was very conscious about the guests that I wanted to come on from all walks of life, telling very real fucking stories. Again, I'm sticking with the concept of this, guys. This is a space that gives whispers a voice, mentions the unmentionable. And that's what this is all about. More than ever, I am so behind the statement, fuck taboo, especially after the last 12 months. And with that in mind, I suppose I couldn't have thought of a better guest to join me on my first episode back. This young man, I still can't believe how old he is. I still can't. We'll get into that in a minute. But this young man I came across randomly on Instagram when we both shared our views and discussed on a very public platform that was not only, I suppose, encouraging, but was also mocking and quite happy to do racial slurs and attacked a lot of minorities. And for me personally, why it affected me is I have a sister with special needs. So some of the slurs that were used were highly fucking offensive in my opinion. And I know my guest felt the exact same, coming from a minority himself. So we actually got talking over DMs, and I was like, I have to have this guy on the podcast. And not only do I have to have him on it, he has to be my first guest. So I'm delighted to be joined today by El Paco. And for those of you that don't know El Paco, El Paco is a traveler. He's a storyteller. He's a bare knuckle boxer, former music promoter. He's also a brother to the incredible actor, Irish actor John Connors, which we're so delighted to claim as our own. He's going to be the next Cillian Murphy getting his Oscar, we've no doubt. And I'm just so flipping thrilled to have him. So El Paco, welcome to the Nothing to Boo With You podcast, and thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm more than happy to have you here. We've been planning this for a couple of weeks now, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we planned it about maybe 3 weeks ago, was it?
Yeah, and as I was saying in the intro there, we came across each other, our paths met with our joint, upset over social media being used in a derogatory way on a public platform.
Yeah.
And I know that is something that you definitely found highly offensive and you wanted to address, as did I. We're not going to mention the person's name or give any airtime to it because my podcast is very precious and prestige, so sorry. Joking. I did get a lot of slack for it. I knew I would, but this podcast isn't called It's All Rosy Dozy, Let's Hug and Love Each Other, so c'est la vie. But I will always call out what I feel is wrong, and I feel you and I, we both kind of, we gelled over that,
yeah.
That we will call out when shit is wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's what you've got to do when, especially if you have a platform to some degree and you believe that you could reach out and make a potential difference. If you see something being wrong, if you see something being done wrong, which involves a victim, and you have the capabilities of making a difference to a certain degree or level, I feel you should always do so, even if it gets you in trouble, because that's what being real is all about. But if you ain't a real person, you know, you just do what a lot of the people did do, and you turn a blind eye and just keep it to yourself and just go with the flow and try and be everybody's friend in this world. But me personally, that's just not what I'm about, because I don't really care, you know.
I agree. And like, social injustice is a massive issue in today's society. And social media, I suppose, you know, in so many ways, people can run with a lot of shit and they can run with a lot of dangerous shit. And especially people who have platforms, you know, with a lot of followers that are young, that are impressionable. Your words matter and your words pack a punch. And there's a difference between saying things in jest and saying things where there is a punch behind that, and you're saying it to deliberately hurt someone and to deliberately, you know, insult someone's minority, ethnicity, color, whatever it may be, disability. So yeah, it's. For me, it's just not cool. So I'm glad that both of us, that brought us together, and I was able to get you onto the podcast, because as I said, there's a few things there in that list there on that CV, storyteller, traveler, bare knuckle boxer, former music promoter, and you're only how old?
28 years old.
Oh, I could tell you, I didn't have that kind of a list when I was 28. So listen, I'm going to shut up talking now because I have you on the podcast, so I'm taking full advantage of it. What I would love you to do is tell us a little bit about you, Paco, who you are, where you're from, and let's get to know you a bit better.
Yeah, well, look, as I said earlier, I'm a traveller. I've recently dwelled into the Bare Knuckle Fight game, former music promoter, also music manager. I grew up basically in Belcamp, which is just down the road from me in Coolock in Dublin. I lived on a halting site with my family, which we moved out of when I was maybe about 4 or 5, due to my family getting into a huge dispute with another traveller family, and we basically more or less had to get up and leave. I was only young at the time. My father passed away when I was 2 years old, so my father would have been dead a couple of years at this stage. He committed suicide when I was a kid. So along with my father not being there and a lot of other older figures, we were kind of almost, you could say, outnumbered. So we had to get up and leave our place where we lived up most of our life. Then we moved into another campsite, which I'm still living in now, in Belcamp Lane, just right across from Darndale. And I went to Darndale School growing up, met a lot of friends there, had a lot of trouble and problems also. Life was mad growing up, you know. It's just me, my brother John, my brother Joe, and my mother, and obviously I had multiple other cousins. But life was hard and it was gritty, especially in the streets of Darndale, you know. Growing up young, all you'd see every day really was what you'd expect in an area like that. And I'm not downgrading Darndale because I love it, but, you know, you had plenty of car robbing, places getting robbed, police activity, shootings, fights. And that's what you see almost on a daily to weekly basis. So I grew up around an awful lot of that, you know, a lot of drug taking and alcoholism. And, you know, a lot of my family, especially my father's side, suffered from addiction with heroin, crack, alcohol addiction.
Oh gosh.
A lot of them died. A lot of my uncle aunties died through addiction. A lot of my uncles are locked up in prison doing life through addiction. On my mother's side, they have some mental health issues and addictions in themselves. So life was, it was to me, that was my life anyway. It was fine, but I guess growing up was pretty gritty and it was tough. And there were so many opportunities to go one way or the other, you know. Like a lot of my friends growing up, once I hit an age of maybe 12, 13, you know, we started to get really wild then, you know, just getting into doing petty crimes, robbing shops and stuff like that as kids. And as we were getting older, 14, 15, it became bigger then, you know. It's like people are getting into robbing more serious things and selling drugs and stuff like that. And look, I'm not a complete victim there. I got involved to a certain degree with a lot of them things. And I guess it was,
did you?
Yeah. I guess it was because, looking back now, you know, in hindsight, I guess it was because to a degree we were suffering financially, you know. My mother always had food on the table. She was a great mother. She was $1 million, so there's no, it wasn't on her side. It was just, I grew up in a mad area, seen a lot of people around me with nice things, and you know, and it, just materialistic things that you wouldn't worry about when you get older, but when you're a kid, you know, you're insecure and you have all these issues going on, and you know, you're just trying to learn and figure out what life's all about. So I guess I fell into some of the wrong things myself, and ultimately that just led to darker times and more trouble, you know. I also joined a boxing club when I was younger, so I was in and out of boxing for years. I've done reasonably well at times, but I guess maybe when I hit the 15, 16 mark, I started to fall out of boxing and get more kind of into crime and stuff like that. Now, I never hurt anybody or anything, but I went down a dark road, you know.
Yeah.
I think when I hit about 18 years old, I took my first drug. And here's the funny story about taking my first drug. It was an ecstasy pill, and how I took it was, the week previous to that, me and my friends went to a nightclub called The Blacker here in Coolock, and the lads were all taking ease, and they said, you want one? Obviously, they knew I didn't take drugs, so I refused it. But the following week, we went again, and I believe still to this day that one of them spiked me with an E. I left my pint outside the toilet, and I came back out, and I just took it, and I was just gone. And that was the first drug I ever took. And I guess since that, life just went.
You remember the sensation, the feeling?
I remember the feeling. I remember the feeling afterwards, like a couple of minutes later, because I was reasonably sober at the time. I was probably only two drinks in, you know. And I remember just this feeling of waves coming over me, like, and like at the time, on the best buzz of my life, of course. But I was against drugs, you know, and that was a real killer for me, even a drug being in my system, because I avoided for so long, you know. I tried to do the right thing for so long. And it was just mad. It just kind of went downhill from there, man. It was just like, as I said, yeah, I was involved in some crime around the area and some negative things, like, you know. And I just went further and further down that road, you know, and becoming kind of one of the lads and not giving a fuck and, you know, had that mentality, like, you know, someone wants to fuck with me, it's on. It's just thinking I'm not really caring about consequences or actions or the future, just living for the moment, wanting to be that person.
You don't think about those things when you're a kid. You don't think about consequences. You don't think about mortality. You don't think about morality. And I suppose you telling me those kind of, being brought up like, I'm a country girl. So you're telling me that 2 hours up the road, you grew up around like shootings and criminality and, like, okay, yes, there's drugs everywhere, but like, that's insane.
Yeah, like,
you know, so you could understand how you could become a product of your surroundings. Well, very easily.
Well, I'll even take it back a step further. So when I was 12 years old, I was sitting in a corner in Darndale on a wall, me and two friends of mine, and a man came up and put a handgun to the three of us, to our heads, and tried to rob us at 12 years old. And he ended up robbing me two friends, and he tried to rob me. And I, today, if somebody tried to rob me with a gun, I'd give them whatever I had. But he tried to rob me, and I refused to give him what I had. I guess I was stubborn and young and stupid. Anyway, long story short, thank God he didn't shoot me. He walked away. A couple of days later, all the families of us all ended up finding out who the guy was. And look, he got a bit of a beating for it, not major, but it was dealt with. Then when I was 15 years old, I only told this story recently on social media. Me and a couple of my friends were drinking in a park, you know, and I left the park early, and one of my friends comes out with two push bikes, two expensive push bikes, and says to me, "Do you want one of these?" I said, "Where'd you get them in the park?" He says, "Yeah." I says, "It's a bit like," I was just thinking, you know, this is a bit too close to home here. It's only around the corner. But he ended up saying, "Look, take one." So I took one. And we get phone calls on the way home while we're on these push bikes of who they belong to. Very, very dangerous people that I couldn't mention for certain reasons. But very dangerous people, very well known for doing big things. And, you know, you get the gist of it. But
and you have to robbing their push bikes. Robbing
two push bikes belonged to their nephews, who was the similar age of us.
Oh, my gosh.
So we get home to Darndale, and I'm on one side of the road, and my friend is a little bit further up the road, and the car that we were told they were in looking for us showed up. And they showed up, and two men jumped out of the car. One had a handgun, but the guy that didn't have the handgun walked further towards me and grabbed me and was dragging me into the back of the car to try and abduct me. And
what?
Just for the luck and grace of God, my brother John got a phone call beforehand here and heard about these fellas looking for us, and he just so happened to turn the corner just as your man's dragging me in the car. So my brother John runs down and, you know, starts negotiating with the fella, and the fella's being very bold and, you know, very stubborn and brazen with my brother John, and my brother John's giving it back to him. And my brother John's telling him, "Listen, you can't take him. He's only 15 years old. There's no way you're not letting you take him.
Jesus.
We're not letting you take my brother into the back of the car." And he ends up negotiating a way for me to get out of the situation. But the only way I could get out was with getting my jaw broke. But my brother John wouldn't take that either. And my brother John says, "Look, if you want to break his jaw, you're going to have to try and break my jaw. And you're not going to get away with it too handy." While still knowing the other fella had a gun. So he kind of put it in the way like, "Look, if you make this into a bigger deal, there's a bunch of witnesses here. And if you're going to start shooting up the place, everyone's going to know who done what." And, you know, we had to take a little bit of stick from your man naturally because of obviously them having guns on them or whatever. But we ended up negotiating our way out of a situation and I got away. Then there was other times where we'd be standing at the corner in Darndale. And I remember this one where there's about 9 or 10 of us standing at the corner drinking as kids, 15, 16. And a guy comes over the field with a big double-barrel shotgun and starts pumping shots at us. We took off. I jumped the wall. My cousin jumped the wall, blah, blah, blah. We ended up getting away. And here was the maddest part about it. The next day, like idiots, we were at the same wall and a fella comes shooting again. We ends up finding out he wasn't looking for us. He was looking for another fella from the area. But we were shot at multiple times, you know.
You were actually shot at...
multiple times
as kids, pretty much.
I was shot at a couple of times as a kid. Then you bring it further into my adult life, like so I had a bunch of friends, you know, from the same life, and I remember my grandfather was very ill, you know, he was dying with cancer, and I became a carer for him, and I'd sleep in with him most nights. But this morning in particular, I left my grandfather early in the morning and I said, "I'm going to go for a walk," you know. And it's the maddest thing looking back at it now, describing it to you, because I can remember everything very clearly. So I said to myself, "Will I walk left to go towards Tesco Clare Hall, which is across the road, or will I walk right to go into Darndale?" I thought to myself, "You know what, fucking, I'm going to walk into Darndale." So I walks into Darndale and I have my earphones in listening to music. It's usually what I do still to this day. I listen to music and go for walks to clear the head, you know.
Me too.
Well, what was going on with my grandfather, very difficult to see, to watch. And that was 5 years ago. So my grandfather's actually dead 5 years ago today, which is the maddest thing about this podcast.
Oh.
Speaking about, yeah, he's actually dead 5 years today. But...
Interesting.
So anyway, so I'm walking through Darndale, I get a phone call off a friend of mine, Jordan, who's one of my best mates, great friend of mine, you know. And he said, he's ringing me and he's saying, "Paco, where are you, man? I can just see you there walking, blah, 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 walk back to me." Now, I walked back to Jordan, he had his 4-week-old kid in the pram. Now, I haven't seen Jordan for 2 or 3 months because he's been on the run, because there's a rumor going around that there's a hitman looking to kill him. So the second I seen Jordo, I says to Jordo, I says, "Listen, man, I said, what are you doing back here, man? Everyone told you to get out of here. Them people are looking for you, blah, blah, blah. He said, listen, I'm after getting the whole situation sorted out. They're not looking for me anymore. It's all squashed. And I was just talking to him, saying, listen, you know in this game, man, you can't trust anybody. Anyway, long story short, I gave him a hug, whatever. And he asked me, where was it going? I said, I'm going up to the Darndale shop. So he takes a walk up to the Darndale shop. But there's a laneway between the Darndale church and the Darndale school. It's a little laneway, and it brings you to the other side. Okay. So he takes a right in there. And as we're taking a right, I sees a fella from a distance on a push bike. And there was a rumor going around that there was a guy in a push bike looking for Jordo to kill him. But just by the look of this fella in this push bike, and there was no one else out, I says to Jordo, I says, that fella looks suspicious, bro. I says, there's a rumor going around, there's a fella looking for you on a push bike. Jordo's panicking a little bit, so am I. And so we takes the right down the church lane, and as we're going by the gates of the church to walk in, I says to Jordo, I says, let's take a left in here, man, go into the church. I says, I don't like this. He said, nah, we'll be grand. And before we knew it, two or three shots gets let off at us. And by the time we turned around and looked, your man arrives right to us. So it's like me here, Jordo's right in front of me, and the guy in the push bike's right there. And he puts a gun straight to my head, and what he said to me was, he said, if you move for a second, he said, I'm going to blow your head off. And I just remember when that happened to me, I just remember, like, you know, I guess people have often heard a cliche saying your whole life flashes before your eyes. That wasn't exactly what happened to me. What happened to me was I thought to myself, geez, imagine dying like this for something that doesn't involve me, and I'd just be like another victim, just like another victim dying for another shooting in Darndale. And I just remember being with a feeling of almost disappointment, thinking I'm going to die for the wrong reason. And I never thought about dying like that, and I never wanted it. But he turns around to my friend Jordan, and he puts the gun up to him, and Jordan's there with the kid in the pram, and Jordan's saying to him, please don't kill me, come to me, kid. And your mama's basically adamant he was going to kill him. So Jordan then wraps his body around the buggy that the kid was in to make sure that no bullets could hit the child. And your man just starts firing into his back. Shot him in the head once, I believe, and a couple of times in the back. And after he done that, he turned around with the gun to shoot me. And I ran into the church and got away. And he chased me to the church door. And there was a bunch of women working on the desks and stuff. And I jumped over one of the desks. And I kind of bided me time for about 60 seconds in there. And he started, inside the church, he started putting the shutters down. And I remember just roaring in the moment at the women, saying, what are you doing? What are you doing putting the shutters down? And they were like, well, stay inside, stay inside. I said, I can't. We made kids out there. So I kind of slowly and gradually walked out of church, like, while trying to be very cautious and aware. And they walked out, and they looked to me right, and I could just see him not very far away, like maybe 100 or 2 yards away, whatever. And I remember just grabbing the pram and a buggy and bringing it into the church. And from there, this is where it gets even crazier. From there, the police arrive and everything like that. The police are looking to question me, but me being me from the area I'm in, you're taught to not speak to police, and it's just where we come from. It's just, and I've always stood by that still to this day. It's just, you get more trouble for speaking to police around here, you know? So it took off, and the next day I got news that my grandfather had a couple of days left to live, and the police were looking for me in carloads to question me. So the police arrives at my campsite, multiple detective cars, jeeps, everything, and came in to speak to me, two detectives, and they arrested me on the spot with a conspiracy to murder. So what it seemed like, you're almost thinking that I set him up, what I thought initially. So they arrested me and held me in for 72 hours, 3 days straight. And I just got news here, my grandfather's about to die, and I just witnessed my friend being murdered, and I got held in straight away for 72 hours straight, questioned 3 times a day for 2 hours each time. So 6 hours a day questioning for 3 days straight. I went no comment all the way, gave them absolutely zero information. As much as it hurt me, it's one of my best friends getting murdered, I couldn't do it. I'd have my own life at risk if I did so, you know, and morally I just couldn't. But here's the thing. So I got out after the 3 days, and my head was all over the place, as you'd obviously imagine, and I just didn't know what I was thinking. All I just remember thinking to myself, I wonder, is my grandfather all right? Is he alive yet? Did he die yet? And the second I walked out the police station door, they rearrested me on the spot. Now, this is the year 2019. They rearrested me on the spot for a warrant dating back to 2013 for no tax and insurance in a car. A silly warrant. And held me in for one more night, brought me to the CCJ court in Dublin. The next day, I got sent to prison on remand for 7 days. So now I'm sitting in Clover Hill prison the next night after just everything I just went through. And all I can remember while I'm in Clover Hill prison is, how am I going to get out of here in time for my grandfather's funeral? Will he let me out when he dies? And my head's all over the place. It's the first time witnessing, like, I've had some bad things, but something that kind of catastrophic. It was just like, the week was mad for me. So I got out of prison then after the week, and the exact next day, my grandfather ended up dying with cancer. So 1 week later, my other friend, Owen, who hung out with me in Jarrah, got shot dead outside his house. And then, my grandfather died. Then my cousin Mel, who I have tattooed on my arm here, he died. And then not too long later after Mel, my cousin Daniel, who's his brother, who I've got tattooed there, died. And it was just a series of events at the one time, and that sent me downhill very bad.
It's very rare I'm speechless. Just from you starting that story about your friend Jordo, like you're saying 5 years ago, so you're saying you're 23, you're a kid. I mean, when I was 23, I was a kid. I'm just trying to process all of that. I mean, there's a little infant there. I'm not going to comment on we'll say the criminal side of it, the whatever was going on there. It's not my place. It's not my world. I don't know anything about it. And that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about you. How do you process that amount of not just death, but like violence, violent death? And obviously the loss of your poor grandfather and your family. How do you even move on? Where was your head?
It's a very interesting question and a good one, I guess. How do you process it? All I can say about them times is, wherever a dark hole was, this was the darkest hole I've ever been in. And it was very emotional. It was very tough. I was multiple times thought about committing suicide myself. I went heavy on taking cocaine the weekends, partying a lot, just partying a lot of it away.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stress to my family and mother. Like, I was never a big trouble riser, but it was just messing with just doing stupid stuff in general. Partying a lot, taking drugs, just life. I just felt like I failed at life, and I just seen all my friends dead and all my friends were murdered, and I was just didn't know what, like, I just thought I'm next somehow or another, like, how am I still alive? And it didn't even feel right to an extent that I was still alive. Like, I didn't even get a chance to go to Jordo's funeral because of everything that happened. My mate Jordo, when he died, and he was one of my best friends, I couldn't even go to his funeral because of everything that was going on.
Can I ask one question just with regard to that?
Yeah.
You witnessed that murder. Okay, so this is just my own curiosity. So obviously you witnessed the murder. You had his little baby there. The guards came and whatever ambulance, I presumed. Just out of curiosity, was anything offered to you? Any, like, support, about how you were coping? Like, was there any mental services offered to you, any counseling services? Was anything offered by the guards or by anyone that showed up that day?
One of the detectives was talking about stuff like that, But the detective just wanted to get information out of me. Even though I was young then, and it's a couple of years since that, I'm a good reader of people, and I understood that he was trying to manipulate me to a degree just to get information out of me, which I was never going to give. But in terms of actual reality, no, there was none of that. But what there was my mother was there, and she was a fantastic lady and a wonderful woman, and she was a great supporter in general and throughout my whole life. So I had my mother and I had my two brothers, John and Joe, who's been the greatest supporters of all time. You know, so I had that, and my brothers are very intellectual men, and they've intelligence blown out their ears, you know, and they can say about my brothers, they can speak to kind of almost any person on the planet on a certain level, you know, and they'll always have a bit of information on each subject. They're that type of men. So in terms of support, I had my immediate family members as massive support, and that was all the support. I don't know if all the support I needed, but it was all the support I got, and it helped a lot. And then after a while, things were just too bad now, you know, they got too bad, even with the help. It was just, so I start getting nightmares every night, you know, I start having nightmares very regularly. I still have them today. My wife will tell you that she still wakes me up today because of them. She hears me roaring all the time in my sleep. But so I start having these nightmares every night, and the same nightmare would be me getting chased with a gun, and at the end of every dream, a gun would be put in my head, but I'd never get shot. I'd wake up from the dream.
Yeah.
So it started happening super regularly. So like my brother and that was suggesting I go to therapy and stuff. So I did, and I ended up getting diagnosed with PTSD. I got diagnosed with PTSD, depression, anxiety, and I was suffering massive ups and downs, and they were talking that I had, saying I had bipolar and stuff like that, and whatever. But yeah, I went to therapy for, I think, on and off for about 18 months. It used to be on every Thursday, I believe. I didn't always go, but I went on and off for about 18 months, and it did help to a degree, kind of helped me understand it a little bit. But I don't know, my life has been stop-start since forever, it feels. I guess how I'd help myself through it too, I'd start hitting the gym and a train, and I'd be feeling good from time to time. And then I'd fall straight off the bandwagon. Things would get tough again, and I'd go partying and sessioning again, and I'm back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it just almost feels like it's just been a struggle and a fight for many years now at this stage. And it still is today. It still is today. But, you know, I guess with my family and stuff today, my kids, and I guess, you know, I've a lot.
Your priorities have changed.
A lot more priorities and obligations as a man and as a father, and
I love that.
You know, and that helps me, you know, like, just I've been through it now, and it's like, even though it hurts, it's just like, you know, I've got to get on with it to a degree.
But like, from what you're saying, there wasn't an actual aha moment. It was just this gradual, you know, therapy, working out, having the support of your family. I mean, how blessed were you to have your mum and your brothers, you know, looking out for you? Thank God you had a good, you know, strong family unit there to keep you up. I know myself from my own mental health journey, the importance of that, because talk therapy, everything is brilliant. But the way I see it is, when you're in recovery from any type of mental health issue or addiction or PTSD, whatever it may be, you need, I just keep looking at it as if it's like cogs on a wheel, and every person, everything you do is part of that. So whether it's your medication, your talk therapy, your spouse or partner, your friends, your family, the way you take it in, like, these are all part of the team. And it's like the team that keeps you going. But at a point then, you have to kind of start, like you said, I don't like saying getting on with it, but I get what you're saying, because we do. We have to accept that life isn't always going to be easy. Now, in your circumstances, Paco, I mean, you've had an exceptional upbringing. And I said this to you when we talked privately, the self-awareness you have is just mind-blowing. And you're still only 28 years of age. You've so much living to do yet. I know you're a dad, and I know you're a husband, and you know, I'm not trying to sound patronizing, but you've so much living yet to do. And like, what do you think was the key thing for you that you didn't get swallowed into the hole, that you didn't stay in that pit of drink, of drugs, of maybe turn into criminality, whatever? What was the, what do you think the main things for you?
It's very easy to actually answer. My family, my brother, my two brothers and my mother, you know, especially. Look, I had a couple other cousins as well, you know, and to be like brothers to me too, that's helped out a lot too. But I'd say my two brothers and my mother is absolutely the reason. Like my wife today, but when I get out of that life, you know, it was just around the time I met my wife. But I'd say my two brothers and my mother was the reason I just kept going through it all and kept bouncing back, you know. And now, as of the last couple of years since I met my wife over 3 years ago, that's now been the reason I've maintained what I'm doing now and not went back to that life, but I look at life in a different outlook, you know, and I look to do different things completely. And so family, man, just if you've got a good family, it helps. If I didn't have that family, I would absolutely be in that life. I would probably try and fucking avenge one of my friends' deaths, if I'm being honest with you. I don't like to sound like that type of guy, because I'm not. I'm a person of empathy, and I'm very conscious and have morals, and I believe in God, and I'm not interested in doing them things. I don't believe they're right, even at any level. But I believe I was that messed up in the head. So much stuff was going on with me mentally. I believe I probably would have went that far about it, because I was in that zone where it was like, you know, kill or be killed kind of mode. And it was just like, but yeah.
And I can't even imagine that headspace, that lifestyle. But I mean, look, we hear this, we see this. And like you said, you could have easily turned that way. But I admire that you're even saying that.
Yeah.
That you're like, hey, I'll be honest, if I hadn't that support, this is what that's the insight. And that's one of the things that I love about you. And I think really emulates your authenticity. I mean, I even find sometimes for myself, when I'm posting up videos, and I see with you as well, like, you're acknowledging the shitty time, you're acknowledging the shitty feeling, you're accepting of it, it's there, but you're like, hey, it ain't gonna take me down, it's life. And I think coping skills, they kind of come, don't they, with the journey. They come with the like, every time you get knocked down, like, I always envision myself, and to this day, and till the day I die, I'm climbing that mountain, and I'm going up those steps, and sometimes I will take a tumble and I'll go back down a couple of steps.
Yeah.
But when I'm going back up, I'll take notice of where I fell, so as that I can go around that, and I'll stay climbing and I'll stay falling, but I will keep going.
It's very interesting you said that, and I totally understand where you're coming from there, because I was only speaking to my wife recently about it, you know, because I'm not all super positive all the time, although I try to, you know, try to fucking do the best.
It's not possible.
I said to my wife, I says, look, I am fed up of constantly falling all the time, because it's been happening for many years, still now, since I'm a kid to a man. But I feel like every time I get back up, I get a little bit higher up the ladder, and my fall isn't as big as the last fall. And every time I get up that ladder, I feel like I'm just on the brink of getting to where I want to be. And I fall again, which is disappointing. But when I get back up again, I'm that much closer. So it's just a battle. And I just had to interrupt there, because I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's so true. And also, another thing is like, when I say I keep trying to get there.
Yeah.
But you know what? The getting there is, that changes. That's ever evolving the whole time. Where I want to be today, I want to be higher next year and the year after, and so on, because I'm evolving. I'm not the same person I was 12 months ago. And I'm probably not the same person I'll be in 12 months' time. I'm ever evolving, ever learning, ever changing. And instead of being frightened of that, I'm trying to embrace that a little bit more and go, yeah, okay, right, let's keep learning. Let's keep this journey going. I'm liking this. You know, but I'm so impressed by you by the fact that you have recognized, like, the recognition of that you have is incredible, and it's a testament to your mom in particular. You mentioned earlier that you lost your dad very young,
Yeah.
to suicide. So your mom, I obviously reared you, but you boys on her own, I presume. Well, obviously you probably had family members, I'm sure, but and you lost her, I believe, in the last
Well,
not so
they
long ago.
literally will be 10 months gone in 3 days' time.
Oh, God rest her.
Yeah.
And she was young,
My
how good when she
mother was
died.
52. She got diagnosed with cancer about 2 years ago. And it was a particularly hard one because her father, who was my grandfather, Paddy Warden, speaking about who's 5 years gone today, when he passed away, I was only thinking about this yesterday and I was speaking about it. So I'll bring it up now since I thought it was interesting. So my mother was super close to her father, you know, and I was super close to him as well because of course, naturally I didn't have a father and he lived next door to me all my life. So it was almost a father figure in that sense. But I was thinking to myself, right, so when I lost my grandfather 5 years ago, it was very hard for us all because we all loved him and we adored him. And he was a great figure within our family and an authority figure. And when he passed away, my mother kind of, you know, deteriorated mentally and physically a little, you know. And
God love her.
She wasn't quite the same again, still the same woman, but she let herself down a little, like not in age or anything, just within herself. And she was down.
Yeah.
She was down more often. She was upset more often. And obviously, we knew it was her father that died, and we knew that she was definitely in a lot of pain, right? And we always tried to help her up and trying to always pick her up. And we believed I understood where she was coming from, and I tried to do my best for her. But it's only now losing her, I really understand what she went through. You know. Now, like, the pain that I feel since my mother is dead is it's been nearly 10 months and it feels like it's been 20 years now to me because I've seen her every day in my life. But the pain that I feel since she's gone, now I can understand where she's coming from, you know, where she came from and why she had it so hard, like, because now I can understand it myself since losing her, if you know what I mean.
And you're not taught how to grieve properly. There's no book. There's no, like, you know, this is the right way to grieve. So when she lost her dad, she probably lost a part. And, like, you know, having to rear you guys, I'm sure, wasn't easy. And her dad was probably her male, you know, strength around her, you know, rearing you guys. And loss is just such an interesting subject. It's such a sad subject. I thankfully have both my parents, but being honest, it's probably one of the biggest fears I have in my life is if I ever lost either one of them, how I would cope, if I would cope, would it change me? I don't know. I can't let that dictate my life because then I'm just wishing my life away instead of embracing and enjoying having them here. But I'll be honest, it's one of the fucking scariest thoughts that goes through my head. So I can only imagine what this has been like for you.
Yeah, you know, I just say that. So for years, you know, I mean, my brothers used to joke with my mother and we used to say, listen, when you get older, we're not going to put you into an old folks home. We'll have you for life, you know. We'll always, no matter how old you get and cranky you get, we'll always be there with you and we'll always have you living with us. And, you know, we used to say that for years. So the fact that she passed away so young at 52 years old, it's like, I never imagined losing her either. I imagined her as 85 years old in a wheelchair and I'm pushing her down the road, you know what I mean? That's how old I was talking about it, you know. But,
I think that's the way all of us would see our parents, and particularly if you've lost one so young, like that's your only parent, so you just they're going to be there forever, you know.
Yeah, especially look when your parents they play such an important role in your life, you know. They're all you know.
Massive.
They're all you know, and most things you know in life you've been taught from your parents, even if they weren't even conversating with you about these things. You've learned their mannerisms and the way of life from them, you know. And
100%.
It's your blood and it's your DNA, you know. It's everything you come from. This is the person that took you as a kid in your arm in her arms and held you, and fed you as a kid and has fed you the whole way up your adult life. And even still, when you're an adult, you're still dependent on them to some degree because there's someone who you can count on to speak there or help out
A
with.
hundred
So
percent.
you're losing
My
all of it.
parents are my goal. Like when I had my nervous breakdown in 2022, obviously I had my husband and he was incredible, but my mum and my dad, I don't know, like, I mean, I remember one night staying in my mum's and getting into bed with her. I'm 37 years of age and I was like, my anxiety was so crippling. I needed to be in bed with my mum. There was no other place I wanted to be, and I'm so grateful I had that. But yeah, and I think the older we get, Jesus, sometimes Paco, I might be with mum or dad and they'd be like, do you remember when you snuck out that time and you went missing while we were down in Kilkenny at a funeral and you went missing and we didn't know where you were? And I'm like, oh my God, and they remind me of things and I'm like, God, I was an awful bitch. If that was me, if that was my child, I would have killed her. I put them through hell. But that's a kid's job. That's a kid's job to be an asshole and then get old enough to realize, Jesus, we're fair lucky we have ye.
For sure, and it just. What I take from me mother, is like nobody's perfect. I certainly ain't, and I've made mistakes in my life, which I regret also. And I just try to do the best I can do today to just be the best man I can be. But what I took from my mother is, in the very least way, I took integrity from her, morals, and I live a certain way, and I bring the realness. My mother was a very real and authentic woman. Very honest, and she had integrity and she had morals, and I learned them from her,
I love
and
that.
they're just, I've never let my morals down in no matter what situation I was in. I've never dropped my integrity, and I never will. I'd actually die before I would, and that's what I take from my mother. And she was a great mother, and I try to be the same parent myself today. I just try and fulfill your obligations and try do what's right,
That's a powerful legacy.
Yeah.
That's a powerful legacy to leave you
Well,
with.
that's what that's to me mother's legacy. Like it's that as a human being, she was just amazing. She was a great person. We will all say that about our parents, of course, because every parent is to a degree also. But obviously, it was
Course, yeah.
the woman. She was particularly important to me because we, of course, we just it, life wasn't easy. You know what I mean? But yeah, I take her strengths with me today, and I try and live up to her to a degree, and try and I guess live on her legacy to a degree, and try and I always hold myself to a standard, and I don't always reach the standard I hold myself to, which disappoints me, but most of the time I will, and that's what I take from parents.
Don't let that ever disappoint you because all we can do is our best. That's
Absolutely.
all we can do. And if you're trying, you're being good, you're improving, you're learning. If you're trying, you're learning. And like none of us are perfect. We're human. We make mistakes and please God, we always grow from them and we acknowledge our shortfalls and our shortcomings because that's what it's about. Again, like you said, I'm definitely not fucking perfect. I have a degree in making mistakes and errors, but I do take something from every mistake I make, and every day is an opportunity to learn something new about me and about the world, and that's the way I take it. Just from talking about your dad, sadly taking his own life, this is kind of leading me into just, I suppose, mental health within the traveling community. It's not something I hear talked about or I've heard talked about much. So I am keen to get your story on it because I love you're a young guy. You've just told me about, you sadly lost your dad to suicide. You've had your own struggles with your mental health and you talk quite articulately and you open up about it. Where is the traveling community when it comes to mental health?
So So I could put it like this, yeah, okay? So let's think old school Irish people, just Irish people in general, you know, the old school, like our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents, you know, back in their days, they didn't speak about mental health, you know? Mental health
No.
issues wasn't a thing, or if they were, they just didn't know about them because they weren't very aware of them.
Suffering with the
Yeah,
nerves. Suffering with
exactly.
the nerves.
That's what
Yeah.
they'd say, you know, or they'd say, oh, that one's mad. So
Yeah.
what where that brings me to now is that's what most travelers are like, because travelers, of course, are an ethnic minority, and they're a small minority of people who take up less than 1% of the population. And because they're such a small minority, they kind of travelers, a lot of them have kind of kept that core Irish old school values. They've kind of kept them, you know, because they mainly stick to themselves, and they're not big on the
Yeah.
social medias, and they don't follow the way of the world, the natural progression of the world, the way it's going today. They kind of almost stick to themselves, you know. So they've kind of kept
Yeah.
that old school Irish mentality, most travelers, you know what I mean? So,
Even young travelers,
like
Paco.
young travelers, of course, are starting to change to a degree, but I'm talking. But like when you're talking travelers in their, of course, 30s is young, but if you're talking about travelers in their 30s and 40s, they've all kind of kept the same old stuff, and they're not going to change anytime soon, I
Yeah.
believe, you know. But yeah, look, it does get spoken about to a degree from a few travelers from different organizations. My brother John has obviously spoken about it multiple times.
Yeah.
But I guess you get a lot of these travelers, and they're just kind of stuck in their ways, and they just it's not that they can't change, it's just they don't want to change. Some travelers feel like they're losing their morals, they're losing a certain traditional way about themselves. You know, when travelers think back to years ago, they think about the great things, the traveling, the traveling around on horses and carts, the camping out, the stuff like that. And travelers have this thing about them where they don't want to lose them traditional core values, and
Heritage,
they don't want to
yeah.
branch out. They just want to keep it within their ways to a degree, you know. So to get like travelers from the, let's say, the 30s, 40s, 50s era to change, it's a super difficult one, regardless of who's speaking about it, because as I said, they really tried to hold on to them core values. I'm not saying it's the right thing, it's just how they are.
No, of course,
The younger
yeah.
travelers, when you're talking teenagers and stuff like that, I do see that they're much more open-minded, and maybe early 20s. They are a lot more open-minded for sure, as of they're look to be more into social media and following the trend. And
Yeah.
obviously mental health has become a thing as of the last maybe 3, 4, 5 years. So they are
Yeah.
definitely a little bit more open-minded. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I have to say on that. Like, you know, but mental health,
Yeah.
it affects the traveling community massively. Like, we have the biggest suicide rate in Ireland. That's by a mile,
You see, that's,
you know.
yeah.
So it's
When you told me that when we were talking, like, that frightened me. Because again, I'm thinking of the younger
yeah.
generation coming up, and I appreciate and I respect the culture and the heritage there, of the traveling community, you know, not wanting to change the values. And you know, a lot of country folk are like that as well.
Exactly.
Like when I started getting panic attacks, my mother was kind of like, what's that? So, you know, she learned a lot with me that she certainly had never come across, and she's your traditional Catholic Irish mother. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
My mum is in her mid-70s. So, like, I can appreciate that, and I do respect that. But because young people are exposed to so much now, like you said, with social media, there's good, there's bad, there's everything. It's coping skills is what I worry about. And then communication skills and how a quick decision can have a lifelong impact. You know, like you said, it's the highest suicide rates, like, among young travelers. Like, that's terrible. And is it more men than women, Paco, is it?
I'm not
More
sure the
young
exact
men?
numbers, but I definitely assume it's
Yeah.
more men, but there are a lot of women
I
also.
would too.
But there definitely are still a lot of women committing suicide. I see it on the regular. Obviously, me being from the travel community, I have a lot of traveler friends through social media, especially. And I constantly see the news, you know, another traveler woman's committed suicide, another traveler man's committed suicide, because I'm kind of linked in with the with all their pages and stuff like that, you know, through I follow them.
Of
And
course.
so I constantly see the news, another traveler man committed suicide, another traveler woman committed suicide. Like, I think I told you recently about, like, I'm not going to name the people, but a traveler family from
Yes.
Dublin, God help them, they've lost like four or five brothers has all died to suicide. Some of their wives has died to suicide. One of their daughters, who I believe is only like 13 years old, recently died to suicide. Like, this is just like, talk about catastrophic events. Like, and we talk about
Yes.
you mentioning like the stuff that I've gone through, which
Pandemics.
is hard, but like, can you imagine having four to five brothers commit suicide, having children and wives commit suicide, all in the same immediate family? Like, it's just truly and utterly and utterly
Heartbreaking.
devastating. It's heartbreaking. Like,
It is.
I don't even know what to say about that, because it's like, it's almost like it's a joke at this stage, the way it's happening so much.
Yeah.
Like a life can just be gone in a
And
flick of a light. It's devastating. I do wish that somebody could get together and help that family out. I don't
I
know how
know.
you're gonna pick up the pieces at this stage, because they've lost so much. You know what I mean? It's hard to come back from, man. It's really hard. I
All you can do is offer your support, your love, your prayers. That strength comes down and holds them. Like, I know there's no fix, there's no, right, how do we fix this? Because it's not just in the traveler community, it's everywhere. But I do believe people like yourself speaking up and speaking so openly, saying, hey, do you know what, guys, I suffered with my mental health, I've had down days, I've struggled. Normalizing this is what I'm all about, and that's what I try to do with my own social media, and I suppose through the podcast where I can, is normalizing that we will have those down days. They come, but like the wind, they go. I always say we never question when we're happy. We never go around, geez, why am I feeling so happy today? Why am I feeling brilliant today? We enjoy it and we embrace it. But yet when we're down, we really hone in on that and we really like, oh God, is this ever going to leave? Is this, it's that balancing act. And hey, I'm one to talk. I'm saying it here, but I can be my own. Like I'm coming away from a chest infection here. On Wednesday, I had a whopper of a panic attack. I was like, why am I still sick? What if this is something? And these ruminating thoughts started coming in, but I had to say, Clodagh, pause. And a statement that I came across in the last couple of months, which I think is fantastic, is even your worst 24 hours are still only 24 hours. And I find that is a very powerful statement.
It is. It really is. It really is. Absolutely. And look, even in your worst 24 hours, the whole 24 doesn't have to be that bad, you know. You can
No.
find a way through it. You know, you might be at 100% in terms of being down, and you can pull them numbers back. You can pull them numbers back. You just gotta, as hard as it is, pick yourself up. You know what I mean? You've got to speak to
Yeah.
somebody, anybody, a friend, girlfriend, a boyfriend, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a nephew, a niece, a cousin, just somebody you
Anyone.
conversate with from time to time on social media. You know, you just reach out to anybody at all.
Yeah.
And even if you don't want to speak about your feelings and your problems, you don't have to. Just talk about day-to-day life. And that alone is good enough to get your mind off things.
100%. I'm sure you can think of days that you've been feeling shitty or down, and you got a call from one of your mates or whoever, and you were talking about absolutely nothing, and you come off that call and you're like, Jesus, for that 20 minutes, nothing was bothering me. I was just in that moment. And please God, conversations like this will be had more and more, and the more they're had, the more they'll actually sink in. And that's what I pray for. Like, as I keep saying, I don't give a fuck about followers. I never have. I have an issue with the word influencer. I always
Me
will.
too.
But if I can help one person realize that Hey, it's completely fucking okay to not be okay sometimes and just be low and not trust me thoughts, but know that they're gonna go away.
Yeah,
That's
I
all.
agree with you. And just before we finish that subject, I'll just say something that helps me. So I think it's I think this might help somebody. So what I do when I'm reading down, so I'll give you the perfect example. So today I've felt like shit all day, you know, and I was questioning why I feel like that. Maybe it's my grandfather's anniversary, I don't know. But I felt like shit all day. I
Anniversary,
even
yeah.
spoke to my wife about it. She says, look, you know why you're down. And so I analyzed it. And okay, so the other day I injured my ankle in training. I was meant to do a walk yesterday, a walk for charity yesterday, but Friday night I injured my ankle, went over and sprained it. So I'm gonna
Shit.
be out for a couple of weeks injured now.
Okay.
So since Friday I haven't been myself. Why? Because I haven't been able to train, which gives you a direct dopamine hit to your brain and makes you feel naturally better. And because I haven't been able
Yeah.
to train and I got an injury, I naturally felt down immediately. And I've been eating junk food, not getting the right nutrients and supplements into my body. Therefore,
Yeah.
dopamine levels down further and further and further, and testosterone level down further and further and further. So as a man, when
Yeah.
you eat the wrong foods, which has the wrong nutrients and hasn't got the right supplements, your testosterone levels will lower. You will not get a dopamine hit. When you don't train, the same thing happens. When you lie around all day and
No
feel depressed, the
endorphins.
same thing happens. So for me, I sit
Yeah.
back and I say to myself, why do I feel depressed? Hold on, actually. So today, I have an injured ankle. I can't go out and even go for a walk. I can't train. I like train. I train with intensity. I can't do that. So that can't get rid of the stress. I can eat healthy, but I haven't because I feel so shit and I'm feeling sorry for
And you're
myself.
feeling sorry for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally.
So
Yeah.
I go from training twice a day, eating nutrient dense foods, being super active, yeah, to doing no training,
Yeah, to this.
doing no
Yeah.
training, eating foods with absolutely no nutrition in them, and sitting in bed watching telly. How else, like, how are you
Yeah.
not gonna feel like shit? So I feel,
A
so
hundred
my message
percent.
to people watching this would be, sometimes take a minute and analyze how your lifestyle has been for the last day, 2 weeks, months, whatever. Check out your lifestyle and think about a time when you did feel great and what your lifestyle was like then, and take tips from it. You know, your diet can play a huge part in your
Massive.
brain because your stomach has a your stomach, your gut feeling. So eating nutrient dense food will make your gut feel good, okay? And your gut has a direct connection to your brain. So when your gut feels bad, naturally and instinctively, your brain will feel very bad because your gut feels bad and there's a
100%.
direct connection. But when your gut naturally feels good, you know, you wake up in the morning, your stomach feels good, there's no pain. Your brain is naturally feeling better because that connection is there. So your diet can play a big part. If you're out exercising, as we talked about, dopamine hits. That's straight to the brain. You know, stuff like that, cold water, going for sea
Yeah.
swims. Sea swims, sea water has over 100 different essential nutrients for the body and mind. So stuff like that, if you can do to incorporate stuff like
Sleep,
that
get proper sleep,
if you can
yeah.
incorporate stuff like that into your lifestyle, along with proper sleep, along with spending less time on social media, you know, you're naturally going to feel better no matter how depressed you are. So my last thing I'll say is, when you are feeling shit, and let's say it's going on a day or two or whatever, sit, take 5 minutes out of your day and analyze your lifestyle and what you're doing, and then check on yourself
I
again.
love this. This is right up my street. You hit the nail on the head. The actual psychological self-check has been a powerhouse tool for me, and you're so right. Again, the last week I've been down with a chest infection. I've been on antibiotics. My energy levels are low. I haven't worked out in a week and a bit. My anxiety is kind of creeping in, going, hey, come on, let's have an anxious party. And I'm like, why? Well, I'm not sleeping great. My energy levels are low. I'm not getting that endorphin hit from my
Yeah.
exercise comfort eating, you know, just not feeling great. And by the way, everybody, this is ginger ale in case you're wondering. You are so right, and that self-check, there's power in that, because you're taking back the power, because you're going, right, why am I feeling like this? Let's analyze this. Let's look internally. Let's see what's going on here. Oh my God, Paco, that is spot on. Oh my God, I could jump through the screen and go, yes, high five. Because it's so important to do that psychological self-check. And like you said, the gut, like with anxiety, I'm sure you know this. Oh my God, when my anxiety used to flare up, my stomach was gone. I couldn't eat. I couldn't. And then I'd get peckish at night because I'm tired and I'd eat shit. And then you'd feel sluggish. And oh, it's incredible what it does.
Absolutely.
I honestly feel like I could talk to you for hours, but I keep saying, oh yeah, we'll stick to where I'm going with this. Come here, before we kind of just round off things, I do want to touch base on a little bit of the kind of society's view on travellers. Where you see it now? What is it like? Do you think it's improving? Do you think it's getting worse? Do you think, like, okay, I'm obviously a settled person. I'm not a traveller. I know some incredible people who are travellers. I also know some not so good people who are travellers. Where do you think the society stand is on travellers, and what can we do? What can we do to, like, to have the likes of yourself as more of a, you know, a person, than rather going, oh, so-and-so down in Cork, you know, is after being jailed for dealing X, Y, and Z, da-da-da-da-da-da. Why should that directly correlate with Paco, who's above in Dublin and has nothing to do with this? You know, that, oh, all travellers are the same. Where are we going wrong, or what can we do?
I've so much to say on it.
You're welcome.
I've already about five different angles I can come from here, to be honest with you. As you're speaking about that, they were coming to me. I'm just deciding which angle to come from, to not go on for an hour about it.
Briefly what you think. Yeah.
Well, I'll say it here, okay? So let's say the elites in this country, the people who run the media, you know, they decide what goes out there in the news. Like, as you know yourself, the media doesn't cover the right things. They never did. They cover certain things.
No.
There's so much going on in this country right now in this present moment that I don't even want to get into. But yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about. The media ain't covering any of it. So that's just for starters anyway. So when it comes to the traveling community, the media only cover the bad side of the traveling community, because the traveling community always went against the system. They never listened to what the system and the government wanted them to do. Because the system and the government never helped them out in any legitimate way. They always treated travellers like they're in a third world country and always gave them little or no rights. So the travellers never listened to them. The travellers went out and done their own thing in their own way. And that's why they called them travellers. They travelled from here to there because they weren't accepted anywhere they went. And they had to make and formulate their own life. And they lived under their own set of rules. And they didn't listen to the outsiders trying to rule them and enslave them. So the media is never like travellers. So it starts from there. The media paints us with a certain brush, okay? And what that happens is through the course of history and time, that has happened and it continues to do so. So for years and years and years, there's been constant brainwashing to human beings in this country. Everyone's been brainwashed by the media about travellers and to judge them a certain way. Not to judge them individually, just to judge them as a minority. And that's what this minority
does. Exactly.
And that's all this minority is about. And that's all this minority does. And that's all them people are. And the media has brainwashed this country for years and years and years, dating back well before I was born. And they haven't stopped and they continue to do so. So it definitely starts from the media. So you have the average person believe in the media, you know. Not everybody thinks outside the box like the likes of yourself and I do. So it starts from there for starters. So let's go back 40, 50 years. So you have maybe our parents and grandparents, whatever, being brainwashed by the media. And then that goes down to their kids. So when them people get brainwashed, they didn't tell their children about that. So let's say this person's grandparent was brainwashed. They tell their kids about Travis being like that because they were brainwashed. Then they brainwashed their kids. And then guess what? They're brainwashed and they brainwashed their kids. It just goes down and down and down throughout the family. So Travis will never, and I mean never, not in my lifetime, I know for sure, they'll never, ever, ever get a fair crack at the whip. And I'm not here fighting for Travis' rights here. What I will say is...
No, I know you're not.
Real human beings should be judged individually, and you should judge people individually, no matter what they are. So, like, if you look at the crime statistic in this country, travelers don't take up anywhere close of any percentage, and, like, obviously not, you know what I mean? Because we're a minority in this country. The minority of these crimes are obviously from settled people. That's because there's much more people, of course, as well. But, you know, we get paid with such a bad brush. All the shootings and the gangster stuff and all that stuff, the 90% of that is coming from settled communities and other communities, not travelers. But anytime it happens in traveler communities, it's branded all over the news, and that's the type of people we are, you know?
100%, so yeah.
It's like I don't call settled people a certain thing because a settled person shot a person dead, all right? I don't see two settled people having a fair fight on blah, 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 and I can't judge that because I have a daughter who's half settled, I have family that's settled, but also I'm just a real person. I judge people for who they are. So when they see this Travers having a feud on social media about something silly and they bring it and they put it all over the news and they slander a whole community because of two or three people or a family got into an argument, that for me just pisses me off, and it's disgraceful and ridiculous. How can you brand every single person in any community in the world for what a certain individual or family is doing? You just can't.
Yeah, I agree.
That's something you cannot do, but it gets done, unfortunately. And once again, so why I believe it doesn't change is because we are such a... Now, Ireland is probably not far off of what's going on in the country right now of becoming a minority. I mean, Irish people are not far off becoming a minority in their own country these days because of certain things going on in the country.
Now, imagine,
so look at travellers, how small they are. So my point is, how are we ever going to be treated any differently when we're such a small minority and we haven't got enough people to stand up for this? We're never going to be treated differently because we just simply haven't got the numbers to back it all up. We're just outnumbered at 1,000 or 1,000,000 to one. We don't actually have a chance, you know? All I can say is, for me being a traveler man, I just live my ways with integrity, with morals, and I represent me and my family in a certain manner. And if people like it, they like it. Thank you very much. If they don't like it, I don't give a fuck. If they have a problem, they come and say it to me face, and we'll get confrontational if you want. I'd rather not, but let's do it. That's how I roll. I really don't give that much of a fuck about them because I look at them as weak, small-minded people, and that's what they'll always be like. And that's just unfortunately the way it is. So that's my look in society.
I think that's a fantastic answer. And like you said, that could be a whole podcast in itself.
Yeah.
But I love that. Because that's the way I live my life. You go on how the individual acts, how the individual treats you.
Absolutely.
Not like tar everyone with one brush. I've never agreed with that. I never will. And I just think more people need to be awake and have cop on and have realization that it's a person who makes decisions, not a whole community, not a whole ethnicity, not like you said, like you don't, what was it you said there, if a settled person goes off and commits murder, you're not putting that on top of every single settled person in the country. Perfect analogy.
It's pretty basic and straightforward, isn't it? Like and it's very obvious. It's very simplistic, really. Like so that's where you know there is an agenda. You know, that's where it's really clear that there's an agenda, because what I said there is very, really basic. You don't need to be any certain level of intelligence to understand it, really. Like it's super basic stuff for students, you know what I mean? So that's how you know there's an agenda being pushed. But listen, it's not just travelers that get that too. A lot of Irish people in general get that. If you ain't coming from a posh place, you know, from an upper class or middle class area, if you're from a working class area or something like that, and you're not coming from money, they're gonna get it too. I live in Darndale right there, like it's a totally working class area, and they get it too. You know, obviously travelers get it very bad, and you've told me a bit about yourself. I believe, you know, you're not a posh person yourself, and I've nothing against posh people. You're not an upper class person yourself, so you will understand it yourself. You know what I mean, as an Irish person.
100%, and like my dad always says, I find something in common with anyone.
Yeah,
and I'm a saleswoman by trade. That's my my bread and butter. But it's interesting you say that, because I do have to adapt my sales technique. Like, if I'm dealing with the farmer, bachelor, that doesn't venture past the local town,
yeah,
I wouldn't be talking away with him like, just fucking blinding, and you know. But then if I have the city slicker coming in who's, you know, in their penthouse, I'm going to be adapting to talk just as proper as they do. So,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's the name of the game. But I don't think anyone has the right to look down their nose on anyone, because we all come into this world the same way, and we certainly all fucking go out the same way.
For sure.
Like, my dad came from a one-bedroom house in the country with six brothers, with my nana and papa, and he worked his arse to go to college and get a really good job. And, you know, it never changed him. You know, he did the same job for 40 years, and all from hard work and graft.
Yeah.
Not handed down to him. He just busted his hole to get where he got to, and that's kind of how I am. But, look, I hope that more conversations like these are had, and that people get educated on common sense.
Yeah.
Common sense and kindness.
Yeah, listen, you put that brilliantly. On common sense and kindness, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And look, as you said, we're always going to have haters. That's just the nature of the beast. I'm totally okay with that, because unless you're in my circle and you know me intimately, you don't have a right to throw any opinion at me that is going to have weight on me.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think you're kind of like that as well.
Absolutely.
So tell me, what is next for Paco? Because I'll tell you, the world is your oyster, boy.
I wish the world was my oyster. If the world was my oyster, I'd be living in... where would I be living? I certainly wouldn't be living in Ireland, because there's too much shit going on in the country at the moment that I don't agree with and I'm not happy about. I'd be living in a mansion somewhere in Spain, or just somewhere quiet, trying to just live my life in peace. But anyway, so the world's not my oyster just yet, at least. My plans and what I'm doing going forward now is I'm training up in Crumlin Boxing Club in Dublin with a guy called Philip Sutcliffe Sr. He's a well-established boxing trainer here in Ireland, former two-time Olympian boxer and multiple championship titles as an amateur. He's also a professional boxing coach. He's Conor McGregor's striking coach in MMA. So he spends a lot of time with Conor. But yeah, he's also my coach, and we are training currently for a bare-knuckle boxing fight. So I originally came to Phil with a plan of turning professional in boxing, wanting to make the comeback in boxing, and just this idea popped up about doing bare knuckle, because I've had a couple of bare knuckle fights before, and a guy from Amazon came in there 2 weeks ago looking to do a couple of interviews and stuff for an Amazon bare knuckle fighting documentary, and Phil mentioned it to them about me, and I got chatting to them. But long story short, Thursday there I done an interview for Amazon for a new bare knuckle documentary, which was great.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, which is pretty good. It'll help me profile, help me get out there a lot. And the 100%. Only reason he contacted me Saturday night asking me would I be interested in doing some more work with them for the documentary, which is great. Also, I just got contacted to fight in an Ireland versus England bare knuckle fight night, potentially in October, November. Now, not confirmed yet, but you want me to fight with Bernard, so that's pretty good.
That's incredible.
So that's what I'm looking to do. Also, Conor McGregor has just become the owner of the BKFC in America, so my ultimate plan is to fight on his promotion. And I have a direct connection to Phil Sutcliffe Sr., and that's what Phil is looking to try and do. So we're looking to fight in that promotion. So that'd be huge. I'm looking to become the first Irish traveler man to fight in that promotion in the history. So if that comes out, that would be a dream come true. And I don't believe I'm too far off it.
Good for you.
So along with that, I'm working on a bit of a movie with my brother John at the moment. A prison movie. I've got a part in that. That's interesting. What else am I doing? Yeah, man,
can you fit in anything else there?
I'm just trying to be a family man, just trying to live day by day.
Of course, yeah.
I'm working on my social media. There's a lot at the moment, trying to build my platforms bigger. And I'm working on making my own podcast as well. A lot of people have been texting me lately, asking me to make a podcast. So I think I'm going to start up my own podcast soon.
I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, so that would be my plan, you know. I'd like to have a good platform, like a podcast, to speak about certain things and just everything in general. Yeah. And there are things that interest me, you know. I like conversating with people like yourself and other people, you know, like-minded people. And I believe I've got things to offer. So stuff like that, around that kind of realm of podcast and fighting and... It's all interests me, and look, make money. I want to make money. That's why I'm doing this fight thing.
And that's why we all do it. We work to live. We don't live to work.
So, I just want to go into this BKFC, Conor McGregor's promotion. I want to make some money, win some fights, and just live on the legacy and just be proud of who I am. I just want to achieve a certain level of greatness, no matter what level that is to somebody else, but whatever level it is to me, I want to achieve it and get the best what I can get out of me. And that's it. And just feel happy within myself. Of always fighting to feel happy within myself, you know, or at least content. And that's what I want to do. Yeah. So I just want to keep following what my passions are and hope to achieve greatness.
Well, I can tell you, I'm really looking forward to watching this chapter for you, because I do believe great things to come in your way with your attitude, with your, as I said, your authenticity, your self-awareness, your morals. You're an absolute pleasure to talk to. I think the world is your oyster, and I think that feeling of fame is definitely going to happen. And I hope I'll get an invite out as well, you know. Paco, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast, for... sharing your vulnerable side with me, sharing your story with me, your accountability, and just being so authentically you. I wish absolutely nothing but the best for you and your family. And I know for a fact that your mom, your granddad, and all your loved ones are looking down with you with pride, because you're an inspiring young man.
I appreciate everything you say. And just before I go, I always say, I enjoy speaking to real Irish people, right? Because at the core of Irish people are good. The core Irish people. And you're one of them people, you know? You're a real, what I would call, Irish person. I believe all Irish are good people, all real Irish people, you know? And you're an authentic person, and you're a good person, and I enjoy a conversation with a like-minded person. So I've enjoyed it. And I'm glad I met you and spoke to you on multiple occasions.
Me too. And listen, we were meant to cross paths.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I've enjoyed everything, to be honest.
And I hope you'll come back onto the podcast again to keep us up to date with.
Listen, if it helps you, I'm happy to do so. And it also helps me. Everybody works with each other. And if you're good, like-minded people, why not? Why wouldn't you? You know what I mean?
Absolutely, 100%. Well, like I said, thanks so much, Paco. And folks, I want to thank you all for listening to this incredible interview. What a way to start the new season. I've some really exciting guests coming up over the coming weeks, and I can't wait to share them with you all. Make sure and follow the Nothing to Do With You podcast page on Instagram and Facebook. Paco, what is your Instagram handle and your TikTok, just so we can share that as well?
So me TikTok is EL, so it's L.Paco 246. That's me TikTok. I'm mainly on that these days, but my Instagram is El Paco Promotions, ELPACO Promotions.
So there you have it, guys. Make sure and give this incredible young man a follow. And yeah, give the pod a follow as well. So look, I'm looking forward to sharing the next episode with you guys soon. And in the meantime, as I always say, be wonderfully weird, be kind, be you. Take care, folks.
God bless.